Hey, you're listening to the Fanboy Strike Back Weekly Review Podcast, episode 24.
Welcome to the Fanboy Strike Back Weekly Review Podcast. I'm Eric.
I'm David.
And we are back from the holidays. We're rested. We're ready for the new year. This is a place where we come. We like to talk about comic books, comic book related issues. We have, stuff going on in the industry, movies, books, TV. Primarily, we're going to be focusing on our comic book reviews this issue and also the fallout from the One More Day saga, which It's killing David, and I can really understand why. But
complete mess.
We really think that this is a fairly large, even more so, it has very, very large ramifications, not only for the Spider-Man books, but for the industry as well.
Yes.
So we'd like to take some time out and talk about that. So with that, David had the task of picking the book of the week this week, and we will be talking about everything that happens, so there will be spoilers, so you've been warned. So, David, what'd you pick?
I picked Uncanny X-Men number 494. And, you know, we've been talking about Messiah Complex. We review Messiah Complex every week. And this was a light week. And I really wanted to try... Eric knows that it can be really hard to pick the best book. Because sometimes it's like the same thing over and over again. You want to try something different, but... After reading this, I mean, it was without a doubt the best book of the week because it was playing off the two major revelations we had in last issue, which we find out that the alternate future that Layla and Jamie are in is actually the same future that Bishop is from. And we see that Bishop tried to take out Cable and is trying to kill the baby, so Bishop might be a traitor to the X-Men, which is just came out of nowhere. Issue 494 is expanding on that. What we've seen overall in this issue is Bishop is about to kill the baby, and Gambit and the Marauders of all people actually save the baby from Bishop. So now everything's back up in the air. Cable's missing. The Gambit and the Marauders apparently are taking the baby back to Sinister. Layla is in the future with Jamie, and she says that they need to go find the younger version of Bishop. And it just took such a right turn, because it looked like you knew exactly where things were going, and then all of a sudden, everything is just, like, right out in the open again.
Yeah, the Bishop thing kind of threw me off for a second, too, because obviously then he goes back and he plays on the X-Men, you know, like he's still one of the team. But it really tossed everything up in the air, and then at the end, Cable enlists the help of Xavier. So Xavier's going to come back into the story and have a much larger part, which, you know, we all saw coming probably a mile away from the beginning when Scott told him to go buzz off.
Right.
But it's interesting. And, like, I still don't know what the hell's going on in this book.
I think the big things that happen in this story were actually... They actually started to... play off of the actual baby. There's been some comments on message boards a lot that you've seen that the baby has really bright green eyes, and that has kind of stood out. And so some people think that the baby may have some kind of connection to Jean Grey. And I don't think that that's the case, but it being this new baby and it being so powerful, you know, that's definitely, it might be a red herring, but that's definitely something to look at. But a revelation that we got in this issue is that the baby, it almost seems like it's in control of itself somehow, because it's dropping off the grid as being a mutant and not being a mutant all of a sudden. And the only thing I can think of when it comes to that is that sounds like Layla Miller.
So do you think the baby is Layla?
I don't think the baby is Layla.
She's not.
No, Layla's not from the future. Okay. No, she's from, well... And that's kind of the weird thing, because the first time that we saw Layla was in House of M. We never originally saw Layla in the Marvel Universe. We just saw her transfer over from House of M. So I don't think the baby is Layla, but it was very interesting that they're actually, you know, showing some stuff about the baby.
I thought it was interesting because when they showed Jamie and Layla in the camp, she makes this kind of cryptic comment that she survives this.
Mm-hmm.
And well, I was kind of like, well, you know, how? Because they're stuck in the future. They can't get back now.
Right.
So, and also I was confused, and I just can't remember when, or maybe I missed an issue, but because Jamie sent out two clones or two dupes. What happened to the other one?
They haven't focused on that one at all. Apparently, because, and that might be something that comes back in the end, but they sent two different clones off of, onto two different alternate futures. And they've only focused on the clone that Layla went with. And so maybe the other clone is obsolete, maybe that future just doesn't make any sense, or maybe that's something that we still need to actually think about.
Yeah, I don't know.
But there's just so much crap going on, and like I said in my review, it's kind of hard for me because as an African-American male, you know, Bishop was one of my favorite characters, definitely one of my favorite X-Men, because he's basically the only black X-Men. And so I don't want him to be a traitor, but Bishop's a very overlooked character, so even if he is a traitor, I'm just glad that he's getting some attention. You know, the other thing about this whole story is that, you know, Bishop came from an alternate reality where he said that there was a traitor to the X-Men, and that was the whole theme around his character. And that was resolved in the Onslaught story in the late 90s, which it turned out that Xavier was the traitor. And a lot of people hated that story. And I wonder if we are going to go back and see, if we're going to see more to that future than we thought we knew. Because at that point, or at this point, it looks like that's what's going on. It looks like Bishop, he was never very, you know, forthcoming about everything that happened in his future. So we might discover that maybe he was lying, or maybe that there's something else that we need to know.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's only like this. I think there's only like three issues left, so we're getting into the downward spiral. So I'm excited.
Yeah. You know, this for me, this book could go any which way from here, because it's still like, I'm still very kind of, it's like a roller coaster in the dark where you can't see where the twists and turns are coming up. Mm-hmm. So, but it's just fun to ride along. So
yeah, it's a fun ride.
So I've been really happy with Detective Comics this week. I've been very vocal about my disapproval of the Ra's al Ghul resurrection storyline and how poorly I thought that was handled.
Right.
This single issue, it's just a one-shot, and it kind of deals with Bruce and Ra's and their relationship and the last step in dealing with Ra's. And so, basically, Ra's comes into Gotham and he says, okay, you know, I'm back, but, you know, you and I are going to have to settle some shit, basically, and I'm setting up my operations in Gotham, and I know you're not going to allow that, so I'm not going to stop until you're dead. And, like, any civility between the two of us is done. So basically, Ra's just steps up kind of out of nowhere and declares war on Bruce. And he kind of mentions, you know, a lot of it's he's separated from his family and stuff like that, and he blames Bruce for the whole resurrection ceremony going wrong and not being able to capture Damian and everything like that. So Bruce kind of...
Wait, I have one question.
Okay.
Because I didn't read this, is Ra's an albino in this issue?
Yeah,
Does he look normal? So they did stay with that.
Yeah, I was very happy to see that. And they all,
okay, that's good.
They also mentioned, like, that was, he has kind of an inferiority complex on, because he always viewed that albino son as being, not acceptable to him. It was kind of a black sheep of the family, and so I think now that he's in that body, they kind of mentioned that he's got a bit of a chip on his shoulder and a complex about it. So Bruce kind of enacts this whole final plan to deal with Ra's, and it was actually really, really dark, but it was very, very Bruce-like. Like, he calculated out everything to do. So Bruce basically takes out the League of Assassins, knocks him out like a sleeping gas, and sneaks his way into Raish's stronghold and just confronts Raish one-on-one. And he's telling him that, you know, you really think, like, I'm going to allow this to happen? You know, like, you broke into my home, you kidnapped my sons, you know, this ends here, and I'm you know, you're going to be dealt with. And it was a great fight. The artwork was very, very good in it. But also, what happens is the Bruce just kind of tells him off and just says, you know, all of this, it's over. And he wins the fight because, you know, Raish, he isn't the fighter that Bruce is. But what he does is he injects him with this concoction that he came up with, this medication that he'd synthesized in the Batcave. And the next thing you see is Bruce in disguise taking Raish to Arkham, and Raish is strapped to a bed and he can't move and he can barely mumble words. And he's telling the doctor that, you know, this guy was a serial killer and he's got multiple personality disorder, and he just got taken out of prison for stabbing a guy, so they're putting him into Arkham. And the doctor's like, oh, you know, just one more, so wheel him down the hall. So you hear Bruce kind of quietly talking to Raish, like, the medication you're on, it, you know, it heavily affects the movement muscles and speech, you know, slurred speech and stuff like that. And it's like, your order is to be dosed with this, you know, every so often. You're not going to leave here, basically. This is where you're going to be from now. It's like, you've survived. You live past the whole death thing, but you're stuck in hell now. And this is how you're going to be dealt with. So I was like, oh, that's pretty good. I put a pretty good cap on it. So it was kind of weird, though, the fact that they brought Raish back just to put him in this situation.
Yeah, that seems weird.
So he's like, you know, someone might find you. They might, you know, one of your henchmen might break you out tomorrow, or you might rot here forever. So it was actually pretty good. It was very, very dark Bruce. So I like that.
All right.
So, yeah, it was a good single issue. I'm happy that Batman stories are kind of back on track now. So.
Okay. What did you think about Teen Titans Year One?
I loved it. Herschel's art is just awesome.
I love the art. Like, don't get me wrong, I thought the art was absolutely amazing. I wasn't a big fan of the story, but I couldn't even get past the art just because it was so good.
It was. And the story, like, there was some few, like, weird turns in it. Like, you're just like, well, that's kind of out of character. But I think that's going to play into the whole story, because a typical early, like, 60s Titans story was, like, the adults get mind-controlled or taken over or something, and it's up to the kids to save them. So I'm betting that's what's happening here, because we see some very dark, like, it looks like All-Star Batman's hanging out in this book, because he's just an asshole.
Right.
But I think that's the thing, is, like, Dick Grayson even says in the book, you know, Batman's acting, you know, weirder than normal and stuff like that, and in the end he just kind of turns around and belts him, so, and kicks them off the team, basically. But we get some really nice moments with Wally West and Dick Grayson at school, and also, like, I love the Donna Troy showing up in Man's World, like, experiencing everything for the first time, like, just the sights and the sounds and everything. Like,
yeah, she sees a boy for the first time, and she tells him that she loves him.
The guy's with his girlfriend's like, I've never seen her before.
No, baby, I didn't know who that was.
Yeah, no, I don't know. The story was okay. Don't get me.
The only thing that I didn't understand, which this is definitely a nitpick and it doesn't make sense, but, like, I don't understand that this is supposed to be, like, I know that you can't put the Titan story back in the 60s where it started, but, like, I was very confused because this basically looks like a story that's taking place in 2007.
Yeah.
With the technology and how they're chatting online. And so that kind of took me out of the story a little bit, because I know, like, this should be, I mean, they don't really need to put that stuff in there. I mean, it doesn't need to be, like, a very modern story. I guess it could be if they're trying to get, not even if they're trying to get new readers, but just if they're trying to get younger readers. Like, I can understand that. But I just feel like, that's kind of stuff, like, seeing them talk on the computer, you can see that Wally was playing with, like, a Game Boy. Like, yeah. I think that should have, like, been taken out.
Yeah, well, like, you know, Dick Grayson is on, like, a new Mac, like an iMac in the Batcave, and then, Wally West is playing with a Nintendo DS, and it's like, okay, like, that just makes it a little bit too modern. I noticed that, too, for a second. It took me out of the story a little bit. I was like, well, if you're gonna do stuff like that, could, you know, these characters are older now, you know, just put them in the late 80s or early 90s or so when they would have been that age, and, you know, if you want it, like, give Dick Grayson a computer, have him have a big boxy, you know, computer, right, or something like that, or have Wally West play with, like, on an original black and white Game Boy. Like, that would make more sense. Mm-hmm. So I think that was kind of unnecessary. But yeah, that's kind of more of a nitpick. But the art was just stellar. The characters and the stylized look of everything, it didn't look like the cartoon at all. It was just something of its own design, and I really liked it.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought, like, judging from the cover, I honestly didn't think that I was going to like the art that much, because it just looks like, it looks very cartoony. But when you actually read the issue, the art's amazing. Like, it just really fits, and it's very, I mean, I would just say that it's very innocent. Like, that's the way it feels. Like, you can take the art very seriously, but it just has that innocence to it, which is actually, you know, a perfect tone for this book.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. Like, I've never been an Aqualad fan, but I really enjoyed that scene where he's swimming around and he's really kind of scared of everything. And,
right.
And Aquaman comes up on him and he screams at the seahorse, and Aquaman
he just kind of looks at him.
Yeah, what the? A boy ain't right. So I kind of enjoyed that. So yeah, that was good.
The last book that I wanted to talk about was Buffy Season 8, number 10, came out. Eric, I'm sure you're reading this now, right?
Ooh.
No?
I never watched a TV show, no.
It's too bad. Yeah, there's no. I can't really say a lot about this book, because unless you watched all of the show and then have read all 10 issues, it would just be redundant. But the last couple issues were written by Brian K. Vaughan, and they focus on Faith, who was another vampire slayer. And now Joss Whedon is back, and he's going to tackle Buffy. And it's just like the show, in which there's an overall arc, which was, that was one of the different things about Buffy. Because in the Buffy show, in the beginning, they introduce a villain, and then there's clues throughout the rest of the show, or the season, about what was going to happen. And then at the very end of the season, there was a final confrontation, which was really cool. And we're finally getting, like, big clues as to what's going to happen at the very end of the Season 8. And a big thing that's flashed through is that you find out that Buffy is going to be betrayed by someone very close to her. And obviously, I mean, if you're a Buffy fan, that kind of breaks your heart, and so you're really kind of left wondering who it is, because she gets this vision, and she sees herself lying on the floor, she's beaten, she's bloody, and she finds out that it's someone close to her who has betrayed her. I just can't wait to find out who it is. And it's really hard to, it's hard to have watched, you know, 7 years of Buffy and then to read it in a comic, because it's obviously, it's very different. You know, Joss Whedon still knows these characters, but it's a lot harder to actually, like, work with the book than it is the show, because when you're watching the show, you see the same clues over and over again, and you know how that's going to relate. But with a book, it's hard, because, you know, I've seen certain clues that were in, like, the first couple of issues that I don't even remember anymore. And the books come out of time, you know, that's not the problem. It's just that, you know, I read how many comic books a week, so it's really hard. So I actually have to go back and kind of do my homework. But if you're a Buffy fan, it's, like, the best thing in the world. So I highly recommend it. Go buy all the seasons and then catch up on this. It's a great book.
So I'm going to do my little countdown recap here for the past couple weeks.
Right.
Countdown's actually been having some developments. Things have happened. The two most notable are, first of all, Mary Marvel has been fighting Eclipso for quite some time. And for some reason, and this doesn't really make sense, but she's kind of all of a sudden came to her senses. And she's like, I've had it. You know, these powers, they're corrupting me, blah, blah, blah. And so what's happened is she gave up her powers, apparently, to Eclipso. I don't know if that actually turned out or not. Basically, she strikes Eclipso down with the Shazam Thunderbolt, and then they both fall to Earth. But they both fall as their civilian identities, Jean Lauren and Mary Marvel. Mm-hmm. So, and then when they wake up, Jean Lauren's gone. So we don't know really what happened to her, but basically Mary Marvel's now stranded without powers on Paradise Island. So I don't know if that's going to kind of be her redemption. Is she's going to... Well, I mean, that might not work out either, because currently, I guess...
Yeah, isn't Darkseid in control of Paradise Island?
Yeah, pretty much, and no one knows it. So yeah, we don't know where that's going, but the more notable thing is Ray Palmer was finally found. And it turns out he had found the perfect Earth, and he'd been there for a while now, and the version of himself there had died, and he kind of came in and just took his place immediately and infiltrated. And it turned out the Justice League had operated there for a few years, but then they fixed everything, and everything was perfect and went to normal. And this is several years after that, and all the heroes were alive. Barry was alive, Hal was alive, and they were all kind of leading their own lives, and Jean hadn't gone insane, so he was very content there. And the Challengers found him, and as soon as they did, basically Bob the Monitor, the one that's been following around Jason, Donna, and Kyle, turns on him and says, "I'm okay. We found you, Ray. I'm going to kill you." So they turned on the team. It turns out the Monitors had dispatched this one Monitor to infiltrate the Challengers to be led to Ray Palmer, which doesn't really make sense because they'd fought so much early on in the story. So I was kind of like, well, that, okay, maybe I'm missing something, but that doesn't seem like it jives correctly. So Ray is found, but in the meantime, they killed off the Elongated Man, the Baryon, the Jean Lorien, all of these characters on this Earth, which continues my theory that they're just going to wipe the slate clean with the multiverse and be done with it at the end of Final Crisis. It's going to be condensed back down because they've already killed one Earth completely, and they've killed off with the Arena series that's been out. They've been killing off the various versions of heroes from a bunch of the different Earths for a while now, so they're all incomplete, so there's no point in going back and telling stories on these Earths if you don't have the characters there. So that's looking like what's going to happen, and so basically the Challengers get away with Ray Palmer, and that's kind of where we're at now, and so we'll see what happens. Basically, the Monitor's big plot was revealed, and Monarch has also assembled his army now, and they've confronted each other. They've confronted the Monitors, so the war is actually going to start next issue. So,
okay. Well, yeah, because I did read the last issue, and I think it was interesting because you find out that Ray is there. He sees himself die, and that's when he takes the place, but he also sees that it was Earth 51, right?
I think so.
That version of Earth 51's Ray Palmer had discovered something about the multiverse that was really important. So apparently the DCU's Ray is continuing that work, and that's what makes him so important to Final Crisis and Countdown. But we just don't know what that is.
Yeah, basically. Because basically this new issue that came out just this last week was a lot of action. There wasn't a whole lot of story development other than the Monitors kind of coming clean with their grand scheme of things. So
that Monitor was just a mole. He was just there to kill Ray Palmer.
Basically, yeah. So, all right. After all of that, the last book I want to talk about is Brian Wood's Northlanders series, the Viking series, and I've been reading. This was the second issue. First issue was good. I enjoyed it. This is kind of more of the same. It deals with basically the prodigal son coming home, and his father's been killed by his uncle, and his uncle has taken everything, his land, his money, and everything like that, and so he's come home to find everything in shambles, which is a pretty basic story element. In this one, he's kind of trying to assemble or find men to fight with to take back what's his, basically, what's rightfully his. It's a Vertigo title. I mean, it's a little bit more mature and stuff like that. The one thing, like, they're a little gratuitous with the nudity. Like, it just kind of seemed to pop up out of nowhere. But the weird thing about it is, like, they're Vikings, but they don't talk in Viking talk. Like, or they don't speak like Thor, I guess. But
right.
The thing is, like, they use modern, like, curse words. Like, they drop the F word quite a bit, which, I don't know.
That's weird.
Did Vikings talk like that? I don't know. It's like they live in, like, modern times the way they speak, but it's a Viking book. So that, every once in a while,
it's supposed to be
a little bit.
Is it supposed to be, like, a period piece, though? Or is it's...
Yeah.
So I don't know. I guess maybe they're trying to put a modern twist on it, but that would be weird.
I guess it also makes it a little bit easier to read, because, you know, if it was probably real Norse, it would be really difficult to understand everything with a heavy accent on it, but
yeah.
Still, like, it just kind of takes me out of it for a while, but it's still really good. I'm enjoying it so far, so I'm going to keep reading this for at least probably the next several issues and see where it goes, but so far so good. Brian Wood, very capable writer. David Gianfelice, I'm probably butchered that name, but he does the artwork pretty well. It's kind of a stylized. It's not quite real world looking. It's very very line heavy and very stylized, kind of a worn look, and everything looks faded basically in the book. It's all kind of darker colors. It looks like there's dust on everything basically. So, good book. I like it.
Okay, well, I think that does it for the books of the week for this week. Last week, Amazing Spider-Man number 545 came out, and it was the finale to the One More Day event, and unless you're hiding under a rock or something, we're gonna spoil it for you, but Peter and Mary Jane are not married anymore. Peter made a deal with the devil. And so Eric and I are going to discuss what we thought about the story, and not only the story, but there has been a huge backlash. Fans have been very vocal about how much they didn't like the story. And there's been several interviews, some with Joe Quesada, the editor-in-chief of Marvel, about what he thought about of the story, and then some with the writer, J. Michael Straczynski. Butcher that name every time. So there's a lot going on. I mean, there's been some big events in comics that have made comics look really good. Comic book movies have done really well. Captain America dying got a lot of great attention. The Spider-Man unmasking got a lot of positive attention. This is something that, like Eric said earlier, is a big deal for the comic book industry as a whole. And for Marvel Comics, does not make them look very good right now. It makes them look very unprofessional. But we'll get into that later. Eric, why don't you go ahead and go first as a DC guy, you know, casually reading Spider-Man, what did you think about the story?
Okay, well, first of all, I'm going to go through and hit some points that were basically where we're left off at. So basically, we're teased at the end of the story with the beginning of the Brand New Day storyline, which is going to kick off next, which starts off with Peter seems a bit younger. He's back to living with Aunt May, who is alive and well, riding a nice little bike to work, and goes and meets with his friends. Flash is back as being part of the group now. Mary Jane, I guess, and him are not speaking. They mentioned there's some awkwardness between the two of them, but Harry's back alive all of a sudden.
Right.
And also, we see at the end that Peter has web shooters, non-organic web shooters. So, basically, what it seems like to me has happened is the past 20 years of Spider-Man series, or modern Spider-Man, no longer exists anymore. And see, what I'm left with is that would bother the shit out of me if this was, like, a character that I loved, like Batman. Like, I totally understand your reaction, because if I'm not that personally close to this character. I enjoy Spider-Man books casually, but it's not something I go to the store and pick up every week. So, but judging from this, I just don't understand how they can just do it and in such a haphazard way as Peter making a deal with the devil. Like, that doesn't seem... Peter's kind of a street character, like Batman. Like, the mystical element doesn't play heavy into their storylines, and nor should it. And especially for Marvel, where Marvel has always credited their books as being set in kind of a real-world atmosphere, I don't think the point that Marvel has made of saying we don't want Peter Parker to get divorced from Mary Jane because we don't want to have to explain it to children why Peter Parker got divorced. Well, okay, first off, it's a statistic. Half these kids' parents are divorced already.
Right.
And it's not like, you know, you've introduced darker elements in the story before. You've introduced death. Why not divorce? Divorce happens in real life. It doesn't make the character any less or anything like that, but making a deal with the devil? Like, you'd rather have a character not get divorced, but you want your character, who is the upstanding character, to make a pact with the devil.
Yeah, I think that's kind of interesting, is that you don't want young, impressionable kids to see a hero get divorced, but it's okay for him to worship Satan and make a deal with the devil. You know, the whole thing is that I'm very passionate about this. I wrote a huge open letter that you guys, if you want to check it out, at fanboystrikeback.com that you can see. If they wanted Peter and Mary Jane not to be together, they should have killed Mary Jane. They just should have done it. You know, it makes no sense to get... It makes no sense for them to be divorced. It makes no sense for there to be a pact with the devil. Like, Mary Jane should not be around if they're not going to be married. It doesn't make any sense. Like, I don't want romantic tension. I don't want to see it. Like, if they're not going to be together, I do not want to see Mary Jane.
Yeah, and those stories exist. Like, if you want the single Peter Parker, Mary Jane aspect with the romantic tension, those stories exist. Go back and read them. But Quesada's, you know, he's gone on record in his interviews as saying, well, we've got such a great cast of characters, we want to keep them all around. And that's why they brought Harry back. They're like, the books are better with Harry. Well, yeah. The books have evolved. Like, it's a story, and you got to progress forward. Like, you can't just sit and spin your wheels the entire time, and that's what all of comic books have done, but Spider-Man has done exceptionally well, was they've let Peter mature, and they've let him grow up. But what this looks like, you know, he's back home, he's living with Aunt May. Like, what, dude, I don't even know if he's in his 30s anymore. Like, is he back in his 20s? But
yeah, they just revealed that. Like, the status quo for Peter Parker right now, and that was another big thing, is that, you know, we're probably gonna jump around talking about what we think, is that, like Eric explained at the end, you don't know what's going on. Because they didn't set up, like, the new status quo for Peter Parker. They're like, okay, here's Peter. It looked like the 80s, the 70s even. You know, Peter was there, and then there was Flash, and then Harry's there all of a sudden. And as a reader, you're like, why is Harry there? I mean, how does retconning this marriage in any way bring Harry back? And Quesada has stated that was the dark part of the deal. That Harry comes back. So apparently that's the bad part of the deal, is that Peter gets his ex-best friend back. So, you know, we can go into that, but, you know, you're left with, like, what's going on? Is he de-aged? And they finally revealed that Peter is now in his mid-20s, and he's done... His life is basically the same, which it just doesn't make sense, because basically he's been with Mary Jane the same amount of time that he's always been with Mary Jane, but they just didn't get married.
But see, that just doesn't make sense. Like, you just can't say, like, well, this story happened, but they weren't married in it. It just doesn't work. And he said in the interview that, well, the rest of the Marvel, they wiped the memories away. Well, that doesn't make sense. Like, are they not going to remember Harry dying?
Okay, here's a big problem with this whole thing, is that this is something that's never been done in the Marvel Universe before, and this is a DC crisis, like, clean the slate.
It is, but Quesada came out and contradicted it. He's like, well, we didn't want to do a crisis. Like, it's not a crisis.
But this is exactly what they did. And
The problem with this is you can't just crisis one book and wipe the slate clean. Like, it has to be a company-wide thing, because you have an interconnected universe. Like, what happens in one book will affect what happens in other stories.
Because the other big issue is that Peter revealed his identity in Civil War, but no one knows that now. And how Quesada tried to explain it, which makes what doesn't make sense again, is that the unmasking happened because Civil War happened, but people just don't remember who it was under that mask. Which doesn't make sense, because it's basically going to be like everyone on the TV saying, I remember when I saw Spider-Man's Secret Identity, but I forgot who it was.
Well, also, like, what happened, like, okay, if May hadn't gotten shot now, and all of that's different, what happened to all the tension between Peter and Tony?
Because that's going to be another
Because dynamic. that was a changing factor in Civil War, was Spider-Man switching sides. And if Civil War still happened, like, that can't happen, because if no one remembers his identity, that changed. I mean, it's a Back to the Future effect. And now I'm thinking about it too much and saying, well, you know, you pulled the string out and now nothing fits together, because his identity coming out was part of the reason behind him switching sides and being duped and everything like that. So it just doesn't work. And Quesada, what irritates me so much, and it, like, I imagine it gets you more, but I'm getting kind of fired up now, but like, he's going on record, like, doing interviews with Newsarama, and he's just, like, being like, no, it works. It's fine. No, this guy's red. Don't worry about it. This guy's red. Look at it. Like, yeah. It's just, like, it's contradicting reality. He just denies it. Like, he's living in a bubble.
Well, there's a couple things about Quesada that kind of gets me. I mean, I think Quesada has been a very good editor-in-chief, you know, and I've been pretty vocal about that. But I've also been vocal about Spider-Man books have not been good in a while. You know, they've just been throwing Peter into event after event. You know, it was The Other, and then he was unmasking, and then it was, you know, Back in Black, and now it's One More Day, and now it's Brand New Day. You know, they have no idea what to do with Peter. And Quesada, it's always felt like, you know, he's always just said, well, the main problem is that Peter and Mary Jane are married, and we can't tell good stories with married characters. You know, like, I can somewhat understand his view on that, but it is what it is. You know, he is a married character, and let's say they want to change it. You know, you can't just do it like, you can't do it like they did it. You know, and what we're talking about is actually part of the controversy, because, you know, the same things that Eric and I are stating about how they came along and did this is what the writer, JMS, is what he's being vocal about, because actually what happened is that he wrote a different version of the story that was rewritten by the editors. And JMS actually came out and said, he said basically the same things that we're saying. You know, he came out and he was like, okay, this is how the story's gonna be. And they changed it. And Quesada's like, okay, well, Mephisto's gonna make the deal, and then all this is going to be changed. And then, you know, Straczynski's doing this. He's asking the same question. He's like, well, what about Aunt May? Is she still shot? No. Well, does she still have surgery? No. What about, you know, the unmasking? And, you know, what he was saying was that Quesada's, you know, reply was just basically, well, it's magic. You know, we don't have to explain it. And that drove me insane. Like, that sounds like so DC Crisis, like, if there's anything I've ever heard, you know? It's just like, we don't have to explain it. Just, like, it's just over, you know, it's done. You know, it's magic, we don't have to explain it, just go with it. It's not bad enough that this story sucked. It's not bad enough that Spider-Man titles have totally changed. But now we have, you know, the writer of the story basically coming out and blasting his boss, which, you know, on the internet.
It rarely happens in any industry without, you know, that guy being fired. But, like,
yeah,
you have to really be passionately, like, upset about something to go and call your boss out on the carpet in public. And especially over a fairly media-hyped event, you know, as much as media attention as comic books get, like, it draws attention. And so, like, this is a really big deal. And it sets a really bad precedent for the industry, and it sets a bad precedent for Marvel Comics. Mm-hmm. And I just think this whole thing was just executed very poorly, because this whole event right here negates the whole Back in Black storyline. Like, that looks like it was just a cash-in for putting him back in the suit for the movie. But like,
that's
that,
exactly what it was.
That whole story now with him being mad at Aunt May being in the hospital, it didn't need to happen. It basically was just biding time. And, like, how many fans were pissed off about that? Because we waited, like, what, 6 months through that nothing happened? And now, like, there's not even payoff for it down the road? And nothing, like, unmasking Spider-Man was such a bold move to take that character in.
Yeah.
And that was such a fantastic thing. Like, yes, Spider-Man's secret identity was always very key to who that character is, but the story's been done for, you know, 30, 40 years now. Here's what happens, you know, much as in real life, like, shit happens and you have to deal with it. And this is just Marvel just not wanting to deal with it. And the only thing is, like, it's been less than a year, or maybe, what, a year since he unmasked? And
it's been almost a year.
Yeah, almost a year. And it's like, okay, if you are going to redo it, give us some time. Like, let us enjoy the new status quo for a while.
Yeah, because you could have had so many, I mean, like you said, we've had so many great stories about Peter keeping his identity. You know, we could have so many great stories about Peter's identity being out in the open as a diehard Spider-Man fan, like, you know, Spider-Man has been everything. Like, Spider-Man was what got me into comic books. I've been reading comics for about 16 years. If you see my house, there's Spider-Man things everywhere, you know? And it was really hard because I was sitting here and I was so depressed. Like, I was honestly depressed, and I honestly felt sick reading this book. And I'm really thinking to myself, I'm like, you know, am I overreacting? You know, like, am I that guy that's too far gone into this, because these are fictional characters, and should I just really, like, try to man up? But, I mean, the reality of it is that I've been reading this character for 16 years. Like, I have a very strong emotional attachment to the Spider-Man character, to Peter Parker especially. And I think the biggest problem that I have with this story is that when it came down to it, you know, it was Mephisto saying, you know, I'm going to take your marriage, but your aunt's going to live. And Mary Jane basically is the voice of reason. And Mary Jane says, you know, I'm going to be selfish here, but what if it's just Aunt May's time? You know, you've always taken responsibility for this. You've always watched out for her. Maybe you just need to let her go. And what she's saying is perfect. What she's saying is the truth. But Peter is saying, no, because she got shot because of me, and I can't take responsibility for that. That totally contradicts his character, because the whole theme around Spider-Man is with great power comes great responsibility. That's like saying, after Uncle Ben died, Peter should have gone and made a deal with the devil then, because it's the exact same thing. He was responsible for Ben's death. He was responsible for Aunt May's death. They should have used that to further strengthen his character. But in the end, they just, like, he just came off as being like this whiny, like, just brat that just, like, can't deal with, like, the consequence of his actions. And that's not Peter Parker. It's really not.
And another thing that is kind of a side point to all this is, who on earth is going to like Aunt May now?
No, Aunt May is tainted as a character. Like, she is, and that's the big thing, is that, you know, Aunt May she's been a loving character, she's been a great character, but maybe it was her time. You know, one of the things that really upset me about Quesada's interview is that one of the arguments that fans make is that for keeping the marriage, is that if you want a single Peter Parker, you can read Ultimate Spider-Man. That's the single Peter Parker, you know? Amazing Spider-Man is Peter Parker progressing. And Quesada's like, well, no, that doesn't make sense. That's just not the way it works. You know, the Ultimate Universe is the Ultimate Universe. Peter Parker was made to be single. But then right after that, he says, if you want to see a family-oriented Peter Parker, if you want to see a married Peter Parker, you should go read Spider-Girl.
Yeah, he just contradicts himself.
And this is the exact same, where you're like, what? What are you saying? You know, and that really upset me. Because he's not really looking for... he knows how big of a deal this is going to be. But I kind of see it as, like, he just took his idea and he didn't really look at the reality of the situation. He's just looking at what he thinks. And obviously, as the editor-in-chief, you know, that's his job. But this has really affected me, because for the first time, you know, I don't really know if I'm going to be reading Amazing Spider-Man. And, like, not only that, but, like, Spider-Man as a character has been tainted for me. Because, you know, just like we said, like, I've recognized that the Clone Saga, even though it went on for, like, 4 years, was a horrible story. But I was still there for all of it. And, you know, Peter and Mary Jane were separated for a long time, but I was still there for all of it, because the character was the same. You know, what they've done here is they changed the character. Like, he was so out of character that, like, it really tainted it for me. And that was, like, that was the biggest part. So, I don't know. I mean,
I just think it's very, very insulting to the fans. I mean, and Quesada's gone to say, like, oh, well, we want to be able to get new readers in. You know, we want to have them be able to come in and, you know, after watching the Spider-Man movies, and pick up a comic book and be able to pick it up. Well, as soon as any story starts, that's not going to be accessible anyway. But also, like, well, what about the legions of fans who have spent their money and you know, the reason why you have a job? What about
please? Yeah, that's and you know that was my whole thing. It's like I had to call Eric the night that I read this because I just needed some support. And that, my whole thing was like exactly what just Eric said. It's like I don't want to be like selfish and arrogant, but I think when Marvel Comics is putting out a story, like it needs to have its diehard fans in mind first, because we are the ones who have not only have been there the whole time, but are going to continue to be there. I mean, new readers are going to come and go, but your diehard fans are what—that's what keeps you in business.
Yeah, and you know, you look at this cover, and you get that "Nuff said" written on it, and it's still only $3.99. Like, this is just slapping the fans across the face. Like,
oh,
still only $3.99. I paid $4 for this, and we haven't even gotten to the worst part of it. Was they reprinted the wedding issue?
Yes,
in the back. And it's like
that was the biggest slap in the face.
It's like if you wanted to tell this whole story to undo the marriage, why reprint the goddamn marriage issue in the back?
Oh, it's like they had no idea like what they're trying to do. I mean, well, apparently like they're trying to do stupid stuff like that to please the fans. But if you really think about it, how would you not think that that's going to piss your fans off more? Like, you know, I've been so against this whole thing, and so, you know, reality changes, and Peter's leaving with Aunt May, and then he goes to a party, and Mary Jane's there. I'm like, what the hell is Mary Jane doing there? Yeah. Like, you just broke them up. Why the hell is she there? And then you have to see the splash page of Spider-Man and Mary Jane together and all the moments, and I'm just like, dude, I don't want to see that. And then we have to hear the line about hitting the jackpot again. That's like salt in the wounds. And at the very end, they reprinted the damn wedding. I'm like, what the hell is the purpose of this? Like, you're not trying to please fans by doing this. You're just, like, it's just like kerosene on the fire. I mean, this is just fueling it.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that. And they, you know, they didn't give you any downtime because, you know, all of a sudden Peter's at a party and he's checking out women. It's like, okay, well, I know he doesn't remember being married, but we do. Like, give us a, you know, their just broke up like 2 pages earlier. Like, give us a break. And it just doesn't make sense. Like, okay, so, and back to the timeline thing and the whole de-aging thing, I just don't like it. Like, okay, so does Peter work Daily Bugle now, or does he?
Does he still
fit with the Avengers? Like,
yeah, this is the weird thing. It's because
like, but also, 1 second, they're also like, okay, Wolverine might not remember him being married to Mary Jane. He might just think that they were like together. Yeah. But isn't he gonna wonder like why all of a sudden Peter Parker looks 10 years younger?
Yeah. Okay. So he's a freelance photographer. He doesn't work for the Bugle, but he's done all the other things. Like, he's been a teacher before already, too. He's been a teacher and a grad student. Yet he's in his mid-20s. So, they're trying to say that all the stuff that happened still happened, but yet he's younger. But my whole view on that is that the mid-20s Peter Parker has no place in the current Marvel Universe. You know, Peter Parker is now part of the new Avengers, and it took him a long time to become part of a team. And they're basically, like, they're pushing him back. I mean, the Peter Parker that they're revealing in Brand New Day, I don't really think is going to really have an actual place on the new Avengers. And so, while it's been, I don't know, I mean, while it's been hard to see the Amazing Spider-Man and then the new Avengers Spider-Man, I think we're going to see that a lot more now. And I don't know how the specifics of it are gonna work, because it's like Doctor Strange should know that this spell was set, but he's not gonna know. I mean, is Peter now going to keep his identity from everyone in the Avengers because he's been really open about it because it was revealed? And it's just so much just crap.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering, like, in the next issue, like, are they going to be like, oh, the scene you saw, that was, you know, 10 years ago or something like that, and bring him forward in time? Because at least that would make sense. Like,
No, this is it. As far as I know, I think that was the status quo for New Peter Parker, mid-20s freelance photographer. They just did an interview with the Marvel editor, and he was basically describing that Peter is going to be. They kind of talked about like how he's going to be annoying, like how. What he said is that when you hear Parker yell, or when you hear Jameson yell Parker, you know, and he has that, like, that tension and that, you know, the aggravation in his voice, like, that's how Peter Parker's gonna be. Like, you're gonna see a lot of people, you know, relating to Peter Parker in that same way. Mm-hmm. Which, as a fan of Peter Parker, I'm just delighted to hear that. That you're just gonna make him, you're gonna make, Peter Parker's the new Jason Todd, everyone.
Woohoo! Go for Jason Todd! Climbing the ropes. Yeah, so again, this has, we've talked about this enough now, but it really has a lot of ripple effects, and the new issue will be coming out soon, and they're going to start publishing it 3 times a month, so it's going to be interesting to see what the readership does to the team. I think from a business standpoint, they hit gold, because everyone's going to pick up at least the next issue. I don't know how long people are going to really stay on it, though. That's what I'm really curious to see with this new status.
I think what Marvel's banking on is getting new readers, obviously, and they expect to lose some, but not a lot. But I think that might really backfire. But, you know, we don't know. We're just going to have to wait and see. So. This is obviously going to, like we said, it's going to have big ripples on Spider-Man books, the Marvel Universe, and especially Marvel, you know, as a whole. But, you know, we're going to cover it, and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. So, you feel better, David?
No.
Yeah, I'm just glad it wasn't Batman. Okay.
I can't wait till something like this happens to you.
Just wait till Final Crisis and Batman dies, and then I'll be all mopey and lock myself in and start wearing eyeliner.
Fair enough.
So that definitely does it for us this week. If you have any questions or comments that you'd like to see us answer in the next couple weeks on the show, you can always email us at contact@fanboysstrikeback.com. You can also go to our website at www.fanboysstrikeback.com, and there is where we post our written reviews of the book of the week each week, as well as movie news, development news, interviews that, you know, like this week with Quesada, kind of stuff that we think that you guys would be into. So we also have a link to our forums on there where we add topics that we don't discuss on the show, and we'd like to get your opinions and stuff like that. So it's a good way to interact with the community. So if you're on there, you know, come on, say hi, you know, introduce yourself. So we always like to meet new people. So we are also on the MySpace.
Yep, myspace.com/thefanboystrikeback. We have our Book of the Week blog there, and you can come be our friend on MySpace. You can catch us on any podcatcher out there, iTunes, Podcast Alley. If you do like the show, if you don't like the show, if you have any comments, like Eric said, please leave us a review or email us. And again, like Eric said, you guys should come on the forums, post what you thought about One More Day, Brand New Day. We talk about everything there, video games, movies, and so we'd love to see you guys on there. And I guess that does it for this week. I'm going to go check myself into therapy. I feel like I'm Britney Spears right now. Jeez, I'm having a meltdown.
Topical. All right, well, we'll be seeing you guys next week.
See you. All right, there you go.